When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Thank you for tuning in to the Black and Gold Hockey Podcast. Please subscribe to our weekly Boston Bruins Hockey Talk on listening platforms such as Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Stitcher Radio, and Spotify Podcasts. We'd certainly appreciate it if you give our show a five-star rating along with a written review. You can also subscribe to our official YouTube channel for a video version of our weekly program. If you'd like to support our show financially, please go to our blackandgoldhockey.com website and click on our affiliated Fanatics banner before shopping online. Another way to financially support our weekly program is to become a Patreon member to be eligible for weekly Boston hockey prizes and monthly Boston Bruins hand-signed jersey giveaways. Please go to patreon.com/blackandgoldhockeypodcast and donate just $1 per episode. Many thanks for the continued support and enjoy the show.
Episode number 336 of the Black and Gold Hockey Podcast is brought to you by FanDuel.com/Boston, the official wagering partner of the CLNS Media Network. You can sign up now to claim your no-sweat first bet for up to $1,000. It's a pleasure to be here on this continuing offseason, and it seems like even though it's the offseason, there's still a crapload to talk about, as there always is. Joined, as always, by Grace Roberts, Mark Allred. How are you guys? Good to see you.
Doing well.
Good morning, everybody. Thanks for tuning in. It's the off season. We have a ton of things to talk about, and but it is the last episode with my friend Steve over here. He's moving on to do a podcast with the Springfield Thunderbirds, a team that he knows very well, as he's the arena announcer guy, PA guy. I'm not sure what your role is there, but
I'll take him.
Yeah, I just wanted to say, Steve, having you here for so many months this season was fun, and I really look forward to our discussion. Obviously, getting the amazing Grace on here as well, just really rounded it out. But then all of a sudden, it now you're leaving, and it's a very somber kind of moment. But I want to thank you for the effort that you brought to the program every week. Our numbers went up. We have a lot of good engagements. People really like the voice. I mean, why not? I mean, I melt every time I hear it. Again, I just wanted to say thank you for your effort here at BNG and everything that you've done. And best of luck moving on to your next project, and definitely dive into that if you can.
Yeah, no doubt. And I want to thank you, Mark, for the chance. And you know, us radio people, it's like a drug to talk into a microphone. It really is. And you go without it for a while and you start scratching. So, you know, having me be part of this and this outlet and talking about, again, I know it didn't end the way we wanted, but that run of that this team put on this season was pretty awesome and pretty special to be able to talk about. So, and I never like to leave any place or on bad terms or anything like that. And, you know, Mark, you've been nothing but professional about it. And Mark's a great guy to work for. So there's a lot of opportunities here at B&G. And if you're looking to get into the business and you want somebody that's fair and helpful that you can work for, Mark is absolutely the guy. So make sure you hit him up on social and get yourself involved with this great organization. I appreciate the time. And yeah, it'll be fun to do something. Well, quite frankly, the Thunderbirds just don't have anything like this. Do you know what I mean? Like, there's like, with all due respect, there's what, like 15 Bruins podcasts, and that's great. The Thunderbirds don't have any, and it's like, let's get this team a little love. So, be working directly with the team, and it'll be fun. We'll have on guys that, like, you know, I want to talk to a Zamboni driver. I want to walk me through a day in the life of what the Zamboni driver does. Like, just different people within the arena that do different things, and so it'll be fun, and that's hopefully coming this September. Although, based on some of the news that's coming out of St. Louis over the last 24 hours, their parent team, we might be doing something a little earlier if this escalates. So we'll see. But I appreciate the kind words, Mark, and I also just want to tack on happy 12 year anniversary to me and my wife.
Nice,
absolute pleasure.
Happy anniversary.
Got married outside in a rainstorm. There's nothing like it. Everybody was soaking wet, and once you're all wet, then nothing worse can happen with a wedding. So everybody had a great time.
But you know what? Nobody will forget that day.
Nope.
True.
Nope. Nobody has. Although there was a lot of pulling over on the side of the road, the windy roads of Vermont, from a lot of my college friends the next morning. Up and down and up and down.
Oh yeah,
Vermont. So. So I appreciate her and appreciate you guys. And this is another special thing about this episode is you and Grace had a chance to sit down with Dom Tiano, who is just a fountain of information. We'll have that coming up for you. It'll be about a 2-hour show. So we'll do our thing for about 60 minutes and then we'll toss it to you guys and Dom. And there's just so much good stuff in there. And we always appreciate his time and what you guys put together for him as well. Mark, what were some of the things that you guys talked about as a little bit of a teaser for the listeners to wet their whistle?
Well, Dom wrote an article a couple days ago about his 2023 NHL entry draft, like where or who the Bruins could pick when the time is for the Bruins to get up and select at the podium. Obviously, the Bruins don't have a first and second round, so we got into details with Dom about, you know, who could be available at round 3, 4, 6, and 2 in the 7th round, you know, and we questioned if this is actually a deep draft or not, and Dom had some really good things to say about that, but, you know, it is draft time. The draft does start from Nashville on Wednesday night, and I thought it was an appropriate time to have somebody on that is not only privy into the Boston Bruins, you know, to keep the related content going, but also very good at like scouting and so on, and has an eye for talent. And we went right through the list that Dom provided, and here's like some names right here on the screen for the YouTube video viewers. These are all the players that Dom wrote in his article that he speaks highly of, and that could be available at these certain times when the Bruins pick. So it was really good to tap that knowledge from Dom, and it was really good to have him on for a whole hour. I love his enthusiasm and just the way he breaks everything down. So that'll be in a second hour brought to you by Action Electronics. So definitely stick around for that in hour number two. Yeah, we got a lot of good stuff going on.
And just to keep the ball rolling here, as we do have a lot to talk about today, something I wanted to start with, which we brought up, I think, right after the Bruins got eliminated, was the assistant coaching on the team. And it looks like former Bruins player Mark Savard is now the assistant coach with the Calgary Flames. Grace, do you feel like they could use another assistant coach or maybe a different assistant coach? And was Savard one of those guys that you had labeled?
Yeah, I mean, I think to a certain extent, it's the fact that anybody is going to go into that Flames locker room is insane to me. So, I mean, if Savard's the guy to do it, he can help out over there, because I know there have been a lot of rumblings about just crazy things happening there. But honestly, you know, I know we talked about it, and when we did have the conversation about the coaching staff of the Bruins, it was pretty immediately after the loss. There were a lot of emotions. Things were, you know, I was feeling a lot of things, and I was ready to throw everybody out and get a whole new staff in. Not actually, but I was close to it. So I don't know, but I'm a little more content with where we're at now. So I, you know, as much as I would like to see some adjustments made with the coaching staff they have currently, I'm okay with where we're at now.
Not to get too far down this road, because I know Bruins fans for the most part don't care, but you are a Celtics fan too. And if you're looking at the Celtics, they have a young coach like the Bruins do. They have underachieved this season like the Bruins did. And yet they brought in, what, two or three different assistant coaches to help Joe Mazzulla out. So do you draw any comparison to maybe bringing in some veterans on the staff that could help Monty? Or is Joe Sacco veteran enough?
I mean, I think that that's a good point. There were so many parallels, you know, between the Celtics and the Bruins this season, down to the getting eliminated by an eighth seed from South Florida. And so I think that, honestly, I understand the situation is different in both cases, but I do recognize that I think there is a value to be had by bringing veterans from outside of the organization to come in. So as great as Sacco, I think, is, and obviously has experience that Monty lacks, it didn't really work the way that we needed it to. And so I do sometimes think about, you know, are there eyes on the outside that would be helpful to what we're trying to do? I'm not ready. I don't know yet to say we should, you know, pull a Joe Mazzulla or a Brad Stevens and suddenly start pulling in these veterans from outside of the organization. But, you know, it is a good question because, you know, we had that veteran on the bench and it didn't work. So I don't know. You want to believe that somebody can get through to Monty. Maybe he'll do it himself next season to, you know, not make the same mistakes again. But I don't know. I'm interested to see what happens. But yeah, when I saw the about Savard, I was shocked, confused, not confused, but I don't know. There's a lot going on with the Flames right now. So
yeah. As soon as we started talking basketball, Mark started trimming his fingernails. Mark, any thoughts on Savard in particular, or if, you know, just a rehash of the Bruins are in a good spot with their staff?
I think that they're in a good spot for right now. I'm not saying a great spot, but I think that another year of what we saw last year, you know, the group together and so on, would be beneficial. But if things don't work out next season and it's, like, really bad, I think besides Monty and John Gruden, I think the staff should be reconstructed a little bit. And, you know, would Mark Savard been a beneficial addition to that staff? I think so, especially on the creativity factor, on the power play and how to transition out of the zone quickly. I think that he would add some interesting knowledge to that factor. But he's also going to be doing it in Calgary as an NHL coach. He leaves the Windsor Spitfires, real successful head coaching stint in Windsor in the Ontario Hockey League. And he's going to join Craig Conroy, who's the new GM in Calgary and a former teammate of Savard. So, you know, there is a relation there. And I don't know. I mean, yes, Grace, I do agree that there's a lot of stuff that's going on in Calgary. There's a lot of flight risks, especially during the free agent time. You know, Elias Lindholm and you know, the defenseman that I can never forget, Noah Hanifin. And Tyler Toffoli, who knows what's going to happen with him? They just seemed like they're all going to be flight risks to leave Calgary. So it's going to be interesting on how this coaching staff is going to be, you know, put together and how Mark Savard can benefit from it, you know. So it'll be interesting for him. I mean, good on him and his family. This is definitely an upgrade in pay, I would think. So, you know, we'll see what happens. I mean, I know he did it in St. Louis, so hopefully he has a little bit longer tenure with Calgary.
All right, so as we move forward now to looking at the buyout window, which is currently open, and I got to be honest, I'm sort of racking my brain. I don't know if I ever remember the Bruins buying out a player since this rule has been in effect, and I don't know, it feels like it's been 5 years, probably been longer. I don't know if, like, Michael Riders, and I know Matt Beleski got traded, and I really don't remember those bad contracts being bought out by this team, like, ever. but we are still looking at both Mike Riley and Derek Forbert. Those are sort of the two big names on the list. And I guess when you're this cap strapped, Mark, it would make sense to probably buy out at least one of these guys, right?
Oh, yeah. And if you're looking at getting rid of Mike Riley's $3 million or $4 million actual money that he's going to earn this upcoming season, if you buy him out, you save $2.6 million in cap space. So literally, that is half of what the Bruins are going to be penalized for next season for the contract extensions or contracts of Bergeron and Krejci last year. So there's bonus overages that they have to that they're penalized on. So already going into this offseason, they were you know, steps behind when they're trying to be cap compliant. And you know, any little bit helps, to be honest with you. And if Forbert has to be the other, this particular buyout window, it can be multiple players. The next buyout window, I think, is only one in a certain period of time. So this is the opportunity where the Boston Bruins need to really figure out where they're going with this. And they might want to do two. I mean, if you get rid of Mike Riley, that's $3 million AAV. You get rid of Derek Forbert, that's $3 million AAV. You know, and when you're strapped like this, you just got to maximize every dollar that's given or available.
Interesting. How about you, Grace? What are your thoughts on the buyouts?
Yeah, I honestly, I don't understand why it hasn't happened yet. I don't get it. I just feel like we're sitting on Mike Riley. Mike Riley's the one, like, we can go back and forth all day about Derek Forbert and, you know, what they want to do with him. Seems like the Bruins organization has a weird amount of trust in him, or at least Montgomery did during the playoffs. But, like, the Mike Riley situation, I just don't get. It sounds like he was sort of, you know, unhappy in Providence this season. We're paying him a lot of money. I think we're right that there's a stupid team out there who will overpay for him. Maybe, but I don't even know that's necessarily true. But my point is, I don't know why we haven't done anything on either Forbert or Riley, because it just seems like we know what's... I mean, I think we know what's going to happen. I think one of them or both of them is going to be bought out. So I'm not really sure what's going on behind the scenes that's preventing that. I mean, everybody on Twitter has been saying it too, like, why aren't we buying out Mike Riley? Why are we waiting? What are we waiting for? So I have no idea. It's super confusing. I think it's going to happen. I guess I just don't know when. But yeah, to your point, Steve, I'm not sure I remember a time when, I mean, I guess, but I, you know, my memory only goes back like 8 years, when there was a buyout in the era in which we were doing buyouts. But yeah, it's weird. I don't know what's going on. It's confusing. I don't know why there's been no movement, and it's freaking me out. I just need something to happen. I need Don Sweeney to do something before I lose my mind.
Yeah, it looks like the buyout window started after the lockout in 2012-2013. So, I mean, I thought it was 5 years. It's actually been 10.
Yeah.
I think that coincides with the new CBA as well.
Yeah.
I mean, with the collective bargaining agreement that keeps getting extended and extended.
Mm.
Yeah. I mean, I think Bruins fans were also shocked. And again, I get my players confused, but it was Montekivi, right? Who was supposed to sign. And it was like, why haven't you just signed this guy? And then they didn't. And it was like, well, what the hell?
Right. Yeah.
I would think the obvious thing to do here is to buy out one or both of these players, and it just hasn't gotten done yet. And I get a little nervous that we'll be fine. We need them. I'm wondering too if there is a thought that because contracts they go up every year, you know, you get rid of whatever $6 million amongst those two players, but you still have to fill roster spots. So right. You clear $6 million for two $5 million players that you don't know. Like, is there a thought that, well, maybe we'll just stick with what we know and ride it out?
Unfortunately, I mean, that's kind of where the path is going right now, with no movement on shedding salary at this point. You know, we're days away from the NHL draft. And I'm expecting the Boston Bruins to do something to try to get some draft capital in this year's festivities from Nashville. So time's running out to try to do that. And to be honest with you, if you're not pulling a trade before the draft, what are we doing here? You right. know, it's just ridiculous that nothing has been done so far. But there is a lot of stuff that's going on, and I understand that deals can be done on the road, on a plane, anywhere. But you know, the awards are coming up, I believe, tomorrow night or Tuesday night. The draft and free agency, there's a lot of freaking things that are going on. So Sweeney and staff might be just a little busy at the moment to do anything. But hopefully something does happen sooner or later.
And Grace, if you're Mike Riley, you know, let's say the Bruins are like, well, we'll keep Riley and Forbert. We'll get rid of Clifton. We'll lose Clifton. Well, you know, the obvious choice to me to play that position would be Zboril. So yeah. If you're Riley, then you're like, wait, I had to play in the minors, and now you're going to put me up on the ninth floor for 80 games? Like, how pissed right. is that player going to be?
But yeah, I mean, I think that's sort of the whole idea is that nobody – I don't think any of us are, like, anticipating Mike Riley getting games for the Bruins, at least not in – I don't know if he even played a game last season. Did he play a game for the Bruins last season?
No.
So, I mean, like, that's, so. You know, I think there's really no, for me, I just don't understand. You're right. So the awards are tomorrow, the 26th. You can't, you know, you can't, like, for example, you can't do anything with either Ullmark or I don't think Bergeron can say anything until after that has happened, because I think odds are they'll both win their respective awards, and that'd be weird if you, you know, dealt Ullmark before he won the Vezina, or Bergeron retired before winning the Selke.
Bruins Twitter would melt.
It'd be over. It would be over. Nobody would forgive Don Sweeney. I wouldn't forgive Don
Big
Sweeney.
Crater. Big crater.
Yeah. So anyway, so I do think it's like so weird that if we can't do those things, why aren't we doing the one thing that we can do? Because you're right. What are we going to do? We're going to keep him, and then he's going to go and sit, yeah, watching the games from the rafters. I don't understand really what we're trying to do with him, or Forbert for that matter. But yeah, it's confusing. It's weird. I just know there's going to be a day when Don Sweeney just does everything at once, and it's going to drive me up a wall. But I guess we'll just have to wait and see what happens.
So sticking on the back end, I mean, let's say there are these kind of changes. And again, here's another name that I've heard floating around a bit who has got to get a buyout because I guess he already got bought out, is Oliver Ekman-Larsson. Who again has just failed everywhere he's went, but he's been in Arizona and Vancouver. Ugh. is this the kind of player that if you do make some buyouts and you're looking for a cheap replacement, would you pay this guy, you know, $700K on a prove it deal, Mark Allred?
I would. I mean, he's got experience. I mean, but it's, I don't know. I'm kind of out on the player after so many years of the rumors and so on. And, you know, especially when he was making $8 million. And what is he going to want for a one-year deal, realistically? Is he going to want a vet minimum, you know, a league minimum to come to Boston and on a roster that seemingly is going to change in the next couple of days, especially before the next season starts? You know, are they going to be cup favorites in his eyes? I believe that a player like him is going to want to go to a team that has a chance to win. And, you know, I'm black and gold through and through, but, you know, I don't have my drunk glasses on when saying that the Boston Bruins are probably not going to win the cup next year. I also said that this year, and then they had a record-breaking season. So, you know, I'm kind of hedging my bet on FanDuel right now, so...
Grace, are you in or out on Oliver Ekman-Larsson on a cheap deal?
I don't know. I feel we have so limited options that there's almost nobody. Oh, that's not true. There are people that I would definitely say big no to, but he is, I'll use the word reliable to an extent, because I think that he's not going to crash and burn anything. I don't think he's going to be a superstar. Clearly, he's been a lot of places and has not been a superstar, even on really bad teams. But he's not the worst player that you could possibly sign on a cheap deal. And so I think that, especially if we're really desperate, I wouldn't hate to see it. It's not the worst thing I can think of. But I do hesitate to call, you know, to say that if we need a spot, if we have to fill a spot, we have to fill a spot. And if we can do it cheaply with a guy who at least has experience, playing on different teams, well, then I think we should do it. So I guess that's where I am. I'm not necessarily all in or all out, but I don't know. I don't think that I can be picky right now considering the situation that we're in with cap space. So,
yeah, I think if my options were to overpay Connor Clifton or buy out Riley and Forbert and bring this guy for 700K, I'll take that option.
Yeah.
And I don't want to look at this team like it's a bridge year. I mean, it's not really a bridge year per se. However, there's going to be a lot of changes, and a lot of your best prospects are probably a year plus away, especially on the back end. And there is talent down there, but I don't know. Mason Lowry is not ready. So, no. Like, you know, I think now is a good opportunity to sort of bridge that with young, cheap veterans that can get you from point A to point B. And again, we're not talking top line minutes. You're going to be down there on that bottom third pairing, maybe a little bit of special teams, but that's it. I think if anything, that's why he's not going to want to come here. He's going to be like, well, where do I play? Like, when am I going to actually see the ice? Because maybe that's a good thing for him. Maybe he's tired of being a top line defenseman on a crappy ass team. It's like Taylor Hall. Like, Taylor Hall was a first line forward underachieving. Maybe he'd rather be a third pairing player and, you know, take on everybody else's third line rather than have to go out there and bang against the top line every night. So, I don't know. It's an interesting spot. Sort of sticking with the defenseman here. The other thing that's come up in the last 24-ish hours, and I just have a little bit on it because obviously the Thunderbirds are the St. Louis Blues affiliate. Talk yesterday was that the Blues were going to acquire Kevin Hayes from Philly. That trade has snagged as of now, mostly apparently around Torrey Krug, who does not want to waive his no trade clause. I don't know how you try to trade a player like that and then have him say, I'm not going. And then you're like, okay, fine, you can come back and play here. I wonder how severed that relationship is with Torrey Krug. And I wonder what teams are on his. It's a partial no trade. So there are teams that he is willing to go to. Whether or not the Bruins are one of them, I don't know. But, you know, the Blues just re-signed a one-way deal with Scott Perunovic, who played most of the year last year in Springfield. Same kind of guy like Krug. Undersized, a wizard with the puck, fast, smart. And I think that, much like I felt here when it was Krug and Grizzly, you can only have one little guy on the back end. You can't have two. You can have none, but you can't have two little guys. And I think St. Louis is like, it's Krug or Perunovic. We'll take Perunovic. Unless they wanted to take a bad kind of, like, what if they were like, hey, we want to get the Bruins involved and we'll eat most of Torrey Krug's money and we'll take on the contract of player X, whether it's Mike Riley or Forbort. If they could make the money work and bail us out of some cap space, Mark Allred, are you in or out on Torrey Krug a reunion?
Boston is closed, and the state of Massachusetts is also closed to Torrey Krug idea. I am not a fan of getting the band back together. Obviously, it didn't work last year, so I want to move on into a different direction, new blood and so on. Same with Milan Lucic. I'm not on the train, the nostalgia train. That is not coming through my town. Sorry, folks. But I honestly don't see how this would work out. I don't believe that Torrey Krug was very happy with his dealings in Boston. You know, being told verbally that he had a deal done and then not have any conversations throughout the year. But when it came to the team backed out and said, we're not doing that deal anymore. I thought that was kind of shitty without even letting him know ahead of time that they weren't interested until the 11th hour and obviously signing with St. Louis. So I think there's a little bit of bad blood between him and the organization. And, you know, obviously he's beloved by his team, his former teammates, and obviously the city of Boston. I totally get it. But I just don't see how a return could work. Even when you're retaining money, when you're so far behind in shedding salary this offseason, I just don't think it's a great idea.
I mean, I don't know if anybody saw my Twitter. I would love to see Torrey Krug back in Boston. I'm not on the bringing the band back together. I'm not on the Lucic coming back thing. It's not what I'm doing. I just like Torrey Krug as a player. I think he fills a spot that we need. If there is an attractive deal, I would like to do it. You want a reliable veteran defenseman, I have one for you. And his name is Torey Krug. And so I think that that's where I'm coming from. But I understand also there are a lot of reservations. There were plenty of people on Twitter who did not enjoy that tweet. One of them is a part of this podcast, and his name is Mark Allred. So I do understand, but I'm on the Torey Krug train. I'm for it. I love him. All you have to do is show me that video of him, that hit. It's the hit. I was telling somebody, it's the hit. The no helmet.
But they lost, Grace. They lost.
I understand that. They did lose. But I do think that, I don't know, I just like the idea. I don't think there's any way that it could possibly happen. I just don't see that happening. You're right. I don't know that. I don't know. It's kind of looking like maybe he won't even waive it. I don't know. So I guess we'll just have to wait and see. But I was for it. I know. Everybody can hate me, but I'm with it. I'm on the Torey Krug train.
Mark, quick question on this topic. Why don't you think Jack Eichon has gotten a chance yet as a player to play for the big club?
Undersized. I think that's the biggest flaw in his game. I think he maneuvers the puck well. He reads the play very well laterally along the blue line. He's that prototypical puck-moving quarterback defenseman. But I just think it's a size issue.
A.K.A. he's Torey Krug.
Yeah.
He's Scott Perunovich. He's Matt Grizzlick. So, like, this is... Yes. And I set you up for it, and you knocked it out of the park. Jack Eichon's 5'9". That sucks. If he was 6'1", he'd be on your number two pairing, and you'd be paying him good money. He had 31 assists last year for Providence. The problem, he's 5'9", 180 pounds. And we've seen the Bruins get into cup finals, playoffs. Quite frankly, I think Florida bullied them. They bullied them. And when you St. Louis bullied the Bruins, and when you are loaded with defensemen that are 5'9", 5'10", 5'11", going into the boards with Ryan O'Reilly bearing down on you, like, you're going to lose that battle. And I just, even when he was here, I was like, it's got to be Grizzlick or Krug. And I'm not trying to be a heightist, but like, you got to play that position. I would love to put Torey Krug in the wing. I would love Torey Krug to play right wing. Be freaking awesome, but he doesn't want to. So, you know, same for Grizzlick, same for Eichon. So I don't think you can have two. Say the same thing I said when he was here. It's got to be Grizzlick or Krug. It can't be both. If I had to have a little guy moving the puck, I want it to be Jack Eichon, quite frankly. And the other thing, when you talk about bringing the band back together, like, I do think that more than any other team in this town, Bruins fans have a familiarity problem. And this isn't to take anything away from Cam Neely or Don Sweeney or Adam McQuaid, who works upstairs, or Chris Kelly, who's the coach, or PJ Axelson, who is scouting. Like, there are 31 other teams that also have really, really good players. Bringing back Tuukka Rask, bringing back David Krejci, like enough's enough. And I wanted Mark Savard, sure, but like, enough's enough. Find somebody on another team. It's like we finally go outside of the organization. We end up with Pavel Zacha and Tyler Bertuzzi, two guys that I'm pretty sure everybody freaking loves. So, like, I'm all done. The Milan Lucic, the Tuukka Rask, the David Krejcis, the Chris Kelly. Chris Kelly does a fine job. I'm sure Adam McQuaid does a great job. Don Sweeney's fine. Cam Neely's great. Let's move on to bringing in people from other organizations outside of Boston.
And I'm looking at cap friendly right now, and Torey Krug 6.5 for the next four seasons is just
rough. They'd have to eat some money for him to come here, no doubt about it. But if they're desperate to get Kevin Hayes, you know, maybe they not only eat some of his, but they'll, like I said, take on O'Reilly or two. And then But that's probably the only way I would do it. I don't know. Interesting. So a lot of question marks on the back end. There were some weird reports. Heat Daddy? Heat Daddy had a thing that said the Bruins were going to do some big, massive massive trade, and then Buchogross retweeted it. I don't know. Grace, did you follow that at all?
Yeah, I did. I was paying attention to it, and I think it was a bit in the end, because they ended up – Heat Daddy ended up just posting, like, something stupid that was just long and funny. But I do think there's I mean, like, the thing about it is, like, oh, big rumbling, something's going to happen. Yeah, no shit. Like, something big is going to happen. They're going to either Bergeron's going to retire, Bergeron and Krejci are going to be out. There's going to be a huge trade. We're going to lose, you know, somebody that we really like on the team. Like, I'll say it right here. Hey, guys, you can quote me on this. Something big is going to happen. There's going to be something huge coming along. Because it's going to happen. Like, I don't know what to tell you. So, like, that going on, like, I hear rumblings of something big. Like, yeah, that's going to happen. So in the end, I think it was a bit, but also I don't think it's wrong because I think something crazy is going to happen in the next couple days. I think after the awards ceremony, probably we're going to lose Ullmark. Sadly, devastating. Bergeron and Krejci might announce that they're not coming back, or they are coming back, fingers crossed. But, well, mixed. I know there's some mixed feelings on this podcast about whether or not we want them back. But at any rate, so yeah, I think in the end it was nothing, but it was pretty funny and entertaining because everybody was sort of lost their minds over it. And so I
they're hyping up the inevitable.
Right. Yeah, I'm like, I know it's gonna happen.
It was Bruins porn is really what it was.
It was, yeah.
It wasn't even Bruins porn, it was just like a tease. It's like, yeah, a link to an OnlyFans account. Like, it was just like a tease. You know?
Yeah, it was a bot, you know?
It was just a bot
in your DMs, like, hey, check out the link in my bio or whatever. Yeah. So
yeah, it's speaking just weird when you get fans. A guy like, yeah, it's weird when you get a guy like Buchgrass retweeting it though.
Yeah, I know. It's just, yeah, but again, like, they're not wrong because I think something is gonna happen that's big.
What was that, Mark? I cut you off.
Speaking of OnlyFans, I should get going on an account so I can fix this internet problem.
True. Mark needs extra cash.
Venmo, yeah, right? Pimping myself out. Yeah, pimping myself out for internet freaking closure.
There you go.
Hey, whatever we got to do to pay the bills. Oh boy. So, like, let's take a look now at the forwards if we could. And again, we just keep hearing these names as the main story here for the Bruins this offseason is the cap. You know, and there's been talks now about Jake DeBrusk and Taylor Hall. You know, Bertuzzi is still out there, and I think a lot of Bruins fans would like to have him back, but he might just be asking for too much money. I'm sure, again, it only takes one stupid team to way overpay for him. It also only takes one stupid team to pick up Taylor Hall and retain his salary. So are either of those names ones that you guys are looking at as possible options to sort of put out the door and get some relief and then either sign a free agent or promote somebody from within? Or what are your thoughts on those two, Mark?
Yeah, I don't see the Bruins moving a forward in the trade to relieve cap or a roster spot for a player with a lower AAV. I honestly think, I mean, there's only seven players that are signed for next season that are forwards, and obviously seven defensemen for the upcoming year as well. I don't know. I kind of find it hard to believe that they would move some of those players, like a Taylor Hall, for instance. I think that he's been a really good Bruin. I think that he likes being here and he likes the group and everything. So, but I do understand the salary cap and everything like that. But I really think that the goaltending's going to take a hit, a casualty hit. And I think that Grizzlick, Forbit, and Riley money off the books could help, you know, benefit the shedding process of the salary cap a little better than moving a forward. I don't know if there's anything internal that can come in and just replace a player like Taylor Hall. I don't see, as much as I'm high on Georgi Mikuloff down in Providence and how he is in the prospect rankings of the Bruins organization, could he be a cap saving option? Absolutely. But is he going to give you those types of minutes, that type of hustle that a veteran like Taylor Hall could do? I'm not totally sure on that. I don't believe that he'll have instant success. I think it's going to take a year for a player like Mikuloff to adjust to the highest level in the world. But I honestly think that goaltending and the defense should be areas of concern where you need to shed some of that salary moving forward to be compliant in October.
Interesting. So, how about you, Grace?
Well, I was going to ask, so do y'all think that, I don't know, I almost thought in my brain that Trent Frederick would be moved. But do you, Mark, do you not see that happening in terms of on the offensive end?
I kind of think that moving Trent is an option. He's an RFA. I think he has arbitration rights. I'm not totally sure on that. I do have Cap Friendly in front of me, but I think that moving him, you would move out a bit of the physicality that this Boston Bruins team kind of needs a little bit. I'd like to see Trent back, but I could also see him being moved. You know, St. Louis is another hot place for him to go. That's where he's from. That's where his family currently lives and so on. So a lot of rumors are going to gravitate there as well. But, you know, I could definitely see Trent being, signed contract for a two-year deal, probably about $1.5, $2 million at the most. Who knows? But, I mean, basically the team has a little bit of control.
Go ahead. Well, I was just going to say on the Paul Bertuzzi thing, I don't know if I'm going to get hate for this. I've never been the biggest Taylor Hall fan. I don't dislike him, but I'm not, I don't really care. I'll be okay with him leaving if it would help us. I would much rather have Bertuzzi, but I don't know that that's necessarily what the trade-off is. If it were that easy, I think we would do it, you know.
The thing with me, and I'm a Bertuzzi guy, and I like what he did here in Boston in a short time, but his injury history is a real concern to me.
Well, it's all good, but I mean, I get what you're saying. Perennially, he's not really the most often injured guy. I like Mark said, I think Frederick will stick around just because he's going to be cheap, and I think he fits a role. And I you know, my mind now just gravitates towards the money, and that's why I'm kind of looking at a guy like Jake DeBrusk. Jake DeBrusk is a $4 million cap hit, and he's a free agent at the end of the season. So, you know, you want to get out from under these contracts. First of all, you don't want him to walk at the end of the year for nothing. So you trade him this offseason when his ceiling has never been higher. I mean, he's coming off of a fantastic career year. So his value's never been higher. And he requested a trade anyway. So now you asked for it. Here you go. Year and a half late. But you know, he's a guy that you don't want to walk for free. If you're good next season, you're not going to move a guy like that at the trade deadline. So he's either going to command massive, he's either going to have a good year and demand massive money, Pasternak type money, or he's going to have a bad year and you're not going to get as much value for him at the deadline. So his value's never been higher and his contract is $4 million. So you want to get back into the first round? It's not going to fill the TD Garden this year, but you give Freddie a prove it deal to move him up and play some bigger minutes. You move a guy like DeBrusk so that you get something at the value. You pick up another, you know, third, fourth, bottom flying cheap forward in a trade or a deal. And I don't know, maybe it's just because I've been playing franchise mode since I was 13, but, you know, I look at him and I mean, I love the guy. Give me right. Because again, I take all this, the way he plays, his style of play, what he did in the Winter Classic with a shattered kneecap or whatever the hell it was he had, like take all that aside and just look at the money and think this is an opportunity for them to get out of some money and possibly trade a guy when his value is the highest. But again, everybody loves him, you know, and it's part of it. We fall in love with these guys once they come here and then we don't want to trade them. Speaking of that, the Athletic Bruins beat writer Fluto Shinzawa did some great work, had off-season content. But he got a little bit of scrutiny over the latest rumor of both Bergeron and Krejci. I think Mark's got a shot of that for our YouTube videos of the Fluto tweet. But again, the Bruins fans' love for not breaking the band up is something that continues to come into play here as well as their cap strap and need to do something.
Yeah, I forgot to upload that image. My bad. Fluto. Threw out there that there's an unknown anonymous player that mentioned to somebody that Bergeron and Krejci are definitely not coming back or something like that. I'm paraphrasing, of course.
I think the exact thing was like that they don't count on either of them being back. That was the line.
Yeah, and you know, I like Fluto. I think he does great work, but he does great work during the regular season. The off season, I just think that sometimes he's reaching a little bit to get the content out there. I get it. You know, I'm a, you know, half-assed writer myself, and, you know, struggle to figure out topics that are going to be interesting. I get it, but I don't know where Fluto's going. Like, the past 2 years, it just seems like a lot of these upper echelon Boston hockey writers just come out with some really rough content in the off season, and I really wish it would be a happy medium on it, because, you know, it's good for 6 months out of the year, but all of a sudden it's like you're reaching in the dog days of the summer. So I don't know. Hopefully that changes. I hate to see somebody like that lose a job, but, you know, the Athletic's taken a pretty big freaking hit lately. You know, media's taken a big hit lately with layoffs and so on. So I don't know. I don't like the clickbait kind of crap, you know. And I tell all my our website writers, don't go typing a article title that entices people just to come in and look, and you basically laugh at them for their click. So,
right.
Yeah.
Well, Grace,
Grace,
let me ask you a same question a different way. Should the Bruins be entering the draft, free agency, assuming that those guys are not going to be back? And do you think that they kind of owe it to the team to make their decision sooner rather than later?
I think they do. If I'm being honest, I'm not entirely convinced that the decision has not already been made and communicated to Don Sweeney. I don't know that there's necessarily, I think it's going to come out pretty immediately after, honestly, I think the award ceremony, right after they rename the Selke Trophy to the Bergeron Trophy.
By the end of the week, you're looking at by the end of the week.
I think, oh yeah, I think so for sure. And I think that I don't know, every day that goes by, I feel a little less confident. And it's not even that I'm putting necessarily stake in what, Fluto put out in that article, especially because I think it was Andrew from Short Shift Pod. Yeah. Mentioned a very similar article came out last year. Same thing about like, oh, we're not counting on them coming back. But I think that's another one of those, you know, Heat Daddy, something big is happening. I think that's sort of just what you have to do. I think you have to sort of count on them not coming back and be ready to, you know, have other players step up as leaders, have other players, you know, try and fill that space to whatever extent they can. And to go out and look for other players and start shopping around. How are we going to fill these shoes in a way that's friendly to us? Because really, I don't see the Bergeron and Krejci, I know every little bit counts in the cap space situation, but it's not really like, obviously our big money saving moves are going to come elsewhere, goaltending, defense. So I don't know. I think that it's going to happen, honestly, very soon. I don't have any inside information, so don't quote me on that one, but I think that it probably will happen soon. And but I also don't know that. Yeah, I don't know. I don't feel great about the prospect of it happening. And I think that we do have to sort of look at elsewhere and figure out, how are we going to fill those spots? Are we going to just, you know, look to Providence, Johnny Beecher, obviously Go Blue. I have to be like, yeah, he can do it. But I don't know. So I think that it's going to happen very soon, definitely by the end of the week, if not in the next couple of days. I think that we're going to find out.
Interesting. Yeah, I think that if the team all of a sudden out of nowhere trades for Mark Scheifele, I think we'd have our answer, you know, which is a guy that I know Mark brought up this week. But Mark, I'll ask you this kind of the same thing. Do you think they kind of owe the team? I mean, Bergeron seems like the kind of guy who doesn't want to leave anybody stranded. So he's like, I'm going to tell you as soon as I possibly can, but I'm also going to wait until the very last minute because I want to make sure it's them. Do you think he's particularly owes them?
I kind of do. Yeah. I kind of do, just because of how everything's working. And, you know, this week is just going to be so tight, especially in free agency. Now, I understand, and I'm not sure if you guys know, but during the off season, the NHL salary cap can go over 10%. But then you have to adjust it to be cap compliant before October, the regular season starts. So you could bank on that money if Bergeron wanted to, like, you know, say something later on. there might have been a verbal, you know, a week or two ago, or as soon as the end of the season and their closing meetings. But I would like to, if I was the general manager, I don't think it'd be kind of dickish to say, come on, guys, I really need to know what's going on because I need to construct a roster that's competitive and compliant by next season. So I would much rather hear it sooner rather than later and not kind of be put into a certain corner, per se.
Yeah. Yeah. If they did, they made their decision to leave on July 8th, I'd be freaking furious. You know what right. I mean? If I was Don Sweeney, I really would. And real quick, this can be yes or no. Do you think either of these guys are guys that are going to say, can I come back in February? Can I retire and then come out of retirement in February? You feel like either of those guys would do that?
Somebody on Facebook asked me this question as well. And he seems to think it's a good idea to not bring Krejci back, but to have him on the shelf until the trade deadline and then sign him, which I think is absolutely stupid, in my opinion, because why? And I'm not saying anything bad about the guy. He's a really good friend of mine and so on. I'm not understanding the process. This is a veteran that's like closing in on 40 years old. It's not the type of player that you want on the shelf. Then all of a sudden, hey, are you ready to go? And this is also a guy that seems to check out at the end of seasons when, you know, it seems like he wants to rest before the playoffs start. And I don't know. I think that a pro player needs to be playing a lot more regularly and not practice sessions. Not practice sessions for 5 months and then all of a sudden jump right into game time situations. That whole idea kind of, you know, fizzles my brain a little bit.
Well, it's like I said earlier. I think there's like a separation anxiety with this fan base. And it's Bruce Cassidy and Phil Kessel and people still there's a Tyler Seguin and Blake Wheeler. They have this like separation anxiety. They don't like these players going. And we saw that with Tuukka Rask. We saw that with David Krejci. We see that with these guys that leave and you got to get Rask back in here. And that was a terrible idea. So.
Yeah, I think we should unretire Tuukka Rask now. I think he should come back.
No.
I'm kidding. No, I know I'll, that.
I'm for a little chaos. Why not?
Yeah, just throw it in there. But, yeah, I think that I think Bergeron, at least, I don't know that I could say it about Krejci necessarily because I think you're right. He kind of is just a different player, a different person. I don't think there's any chance Bergeron would go for that. Like, I just think he would not want to do that. If he comes back, he wants to be a leader and stay. And I think that's honestly probably a big thing that is, I have to imagine, sort of holding him back. I think that he's sort of the person that wants to fully commit and wants to be all in, but he can't do it. If he isn't going to be able to give his whole self, then I don't think he's going to want to come back. So I think that that's the one thing that's holding him back as well, is just that, you know, is he going to be able to be all in? Because if not, then right. Make room for somebody else, somebody younger.
And there's a lot of guys down in Providence that have been waiting, and they're starting to get a little annoyed. And I'm not saying that they're world beaters, but, you know, Lauko and Steen and these guys are just, like, chomping at the bit to get NHL time, and it's just it hasn't come. And but like I said, I do think we're a couple of years, maybe 1 or 2 years away from, like, I want Beecher playing NHL minutes. I'm not ready for him to play first-line minutes, second-line. Like, you know, I don't want him playing 25 minutes a night. We'll see. We'll certainly see what happens. Another guy talking about Providence, and we'll do this before we get to Dom. We're going to have Dom coming up here in a little bit. Goaltender Brandon Bussey, a 1-year, two-way contract extension. Do you think this has any effect on the current goaltending situation, or is just this sort of business as usual?
Business as usual. This is a depth signing. I don't think this moves the needle on whether we trade Jeremy Swayman or Linus Ullmark. Linus and Bussey are the only two goaltenders in this organization that are signed as of right now. So this technically needed to be done, like you said, business as usual. But this also opens a door for Brandon to get NHL games if the Boston Bruins really want to save as much cap space as possible and make him the backup. I would like to see it, yes, because I'm a huge Brandon Bussey guy. Right-handed goaltenders are always the best, just saying. And but I really think I would rather have him spend a little bit more time in Providence, and maybe the Bruins go out and get a veteran goaltender on the cheap, like $1 million that has experience and so on.
Keith
and
Kincaid.
If Brandon,
Keith
no,
Kincaid.
Stop it,
no.
nah, he was not happy here, and particularly due to Brandon Bussey and his excellence in the minor pros, which had Keith a little upset that he didn't get the Friday-Sunday rotation, and Brandon did. So that's probably not going to happen. But I could see somebody come in and just be that, you know, netminder, but that's on a short leash. If Brandon's really killing it like he did down in Providence last season, this might move the needle to possibly put the veteran goaltender, the veteran backup on waivers and get, you know, Bussey into the NHL as a NHL backup. So anything could happen, but I would rather see just a little more time from Brandon to see if he's getting it. You know, I want to see how he's working out during the offseason, because the guy is killing it right now. He's been in goalie freaking training schools for the last couple weeks, just taking shots, getting his tempo down, staying square to the puck, timing, his reaction times are being worked on. So I think he's going to have a big year, but I'm slamming on the brakes a little bit of an idea of a Jeremy Swayman and a Brandon Bussey tandem next.
Well, yeah, we'll have to see what happens with that. Again, I'm in team sign Swayman, trade Ullmark. Again, it's just the nice thing about these episodes is that we look at all this work that still has to be done for a guy like Don Sweeney and, like you said, Evan Gold, and all that, you know, just a lot happening. So I don't really remember a Bruins offseason being this big, I guess. I don't even say like intense or like important, but this is a big ass offseason for this team. If they got guys that need to go, and they have guys that need to come, and they have guys that need to sign, and guys they need to buy out, and it seems more banana land this year than in years past, which of course is good for us. We'll take the content.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, Mark, do we have a jersey to give away at this juncture?
We do. It is the time of the month where we give a hand-signed jersey away to a Patreon member, and to be eligible to be a Patreon member and receive one of these amazing hand-signed jerseys. This one is an Adam McQuaid 2010-11 Stanley Cup champ, fully authenticated, and this is courtesy of Bruce Sullivan from Boston Sports and Music Memorabilia. This the winner of this jersey is Susan Arundel. I think I said her name correctly. Probably not.
Arundel? That's from Frozen.
Aaron, that
yeah,
is Frozen.
I guess.
Anyway, just I don't go know. Ahead. That's a dad
but,
joke.
Go ahead. But, yeah, so if you want to be eligible to win a hand-signed jersey every month, please go to patreon.com/blackandgoldhockeypodcast. Donate $1. And the program is that half of your dollar pays the bills around here at our Black and Gold Production Sports Media Company, and the other half goes to buying these fantastic jerseys where you can win just for $1 per episode. And we do about 4 episodes. Sometimes we might do 6, so $4 to $6. It's a small monthly investment to spice up the fan cave, because you guys all know you need it. Get rid of the Patriots crap. Get rid of the Red Sox crap. Get rid of Celtics crap. Black and gold, that shit, through and through. So go to patreon.com/blackandgoldhockeypodcast and donate that $1. Just it. $1.
Well, congratulations.
Congratulations, Susan.
Thank you, Susan, for the support here at Black and Gold. We really do appreciate it. Coming up, we will have our interview with Dom Tiano, which was really in-depth and went on for about a solid hour. So definitely stay tuned. But first, we want to hear from our friends at FanDuel. Baseball season's in full swing, and there's no better place to get in on the action than FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook. Right now, new customers get a no-sweat first bet up to $1,000. That's up to $1,000 back in bonus bets if your first bet doesn't win. So you can make a bet, lose, and still have some money to play around with. Just go to FanDuel.com/Boston and join today. Today, I'm going to just assume that the Yankees are going to keep losing because they suck. I'm going to take Texas -1.5, and I'm going to take the over because Gerrit Cole is pitching, and he, like the Yankees, sucks. So those are going to be my my couple today. Anybody else? I know, Mark, you got the Travelers going on down in Connecticut. Is that?
Oh, yeah. I got lots of action on the golf, you know, and also this coming week, the Rocket Mortgage Classic from Detroit Golf Club is June 29th to July 2nd. So I'll be getting in the action on that on the FanDuel app. Loving it. Losing lots of money, but love it.
That's awesome. Well, again, FanDuel.com/Boston. Don't miss your chance to snag a no-sweat first bet up to $1,000. We joined FanDuel today. Just go to FanDuel.com/Boston to sign up. FanDuel, the official partner of Major League Baseball. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission. 21 plus and present Massachusetts. First online real money wager only. $10 deposit required. Refund issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 14 days. Restrictions apply. See terms at FanDuel.com/sportsbook. Hope is here. If you have a gambling problem, you can visit gamblinghelplinema.org or call 800-327-5050 for 24/7 support. Play it smart from the start. Visit GameSenseMA.com or call 1-800-GAM-1234. So big thanks to our friends over there at FanDuel. Again, we have the interview coming up that you guys did with Dom Tiano, which is really exciting. I, at this point, will say that I guess this is kind of it for me, but I will not be a stranger, Mark and Grace. If you ever need me back for a little bit, let me know. But sort of as they started the hour, I really appreciate everything, Mark, that you guys have done for me. And Grace, it's been a pleasure spitting hot takes with you and getting you sort of going here. I think you're absolutely crushing everything that you're doing, and it was a pleasure to have you on board. So I wish you guys the best of luck, and if you need anything, obviously reach out. But I guess this is where you play the Sarah McLachlan music.
Yeah, right.
Absolutely. You're going to miss you, Steve. And thanks again for everything that you've done. I do want to mention that the interview coming up with Dom Tiano is sponsored by Action Electronics. And if you have that read right there, yep. Steve.
Sure do. For over 30 years, Action Electronics, a Walpole Mass company, has been the leading source of value-added, time-saving supply chain solutions. You can visit them online at actionelectronics.com. You can give their customer service a call as well, 508-668-3131, and follow the company's social media accounts, Facebook, Action Electronics, on Twitter, AE Supply Chain, on Instagram, Action Electronics. You know how those social media sites work. Just go up to the search bar, type it in, bang, it'll pop right up. You can also follow them on YouTube. They have their own YouTube channel at Action Electronics TV. So, yes, this interview comes to us courtesy of Action Electronics. We appreciate them. And on to Dom Tiano.
All right. As mentioned earlier in the program, we do have a very special guest this afternoon. We're recording on Saturday before the 2023 NHL draft comes up. And this guest appearance is brought to you by Action Electronics. The great folks at Action Electronics bring in the amazing Dom Tiano, good friend, longtime friend. And this has been a long time waiting, my man. I know you've been super, super busy covering the prospects, but now it's the off season, so your downtime has created a lot of time and enough time to come on to the program with Grace and I. And I'm sorry, Steve couldn't make it this afternoon, but we appreciate your time in discussing the upcoming entry draft that's going to be happening from Nashville. Starting on Wednesday night with round one. We know the Bruins don't pick in round one, but rounds 2 through 7 will be on Thursday. And you wrote a great article that I'd like to talk about certain things. But welcome back, Dom. Hopefully you are well. And again, I truly appreciate this opportunity to talk about the prospects days before the entry draft happens.
Yeah, always happy to be on, Mark. Grace, yeah, you guys know that. It's been a long season, you know, covering primarily the Ontario Hockey League. That's over. You know, the NHL offseason is here, and, you know, it's not really a lull because we're into a very, very busy next 7 to 10 days when it comes to what Don Sweeney and the Bruins are going to be doing. So, no rest for the wicked just yet.
Hey, why don't we jump right in and talk about the depth of this draft, Dom. And I know that some folks out there are calling it a deep draft, which it might be, but I'd like to get your opinion on what you've seen, because you've gone through so many great scouting reports, whether it be McKean's, whether it be elite prospects and all these things, and looking at where others, you know, place rankings on a certain prospect or hockey player that's developing, you know, so you're I forgot where I was going with that.
My opinion on it. Well, guys, I'll tell you, I don't think it's as deep a draft as at least the fans are making it out to be. I think when you look at the depth of the draft, you can look through a dozen or so of the public rankings that are out there and available to everybody. When you look at the first round, there's a general consensus of who's going and who's going where. And those dozen or so scouting publications agree on it, even when you get into the second round. But you have players, when you look at these publications, that you'll have a player that is drafted by one in the 70s, and another one may have him ranked in 170, and another one not have him ranked at all. There really is no consensus. It's so widespread. If there was depth, you'd see a lot more consensus in it. So I'm not, for that reason alone, plus my own personal thoughts, I don't think it's that deep of a draft. I'm looking more forward to 2024. Unfortunately, the Bruins have, what, 3 picks in 2024?
Grace, you got anything for them?
Yeah, I was going to ask, so do you see it as being a particularly top-heavy draft? Because I feel like a lot of people are talking about the strength of the first round a lot, I've heard. And I mean, obviously, you see the players that are up there, Connor Bedard, Adam Fantilli, who in any other year could have gone number one. So do you see that as maybe skewing some people's opinions, that they see the top heavy part and then they assume the rest of it's going to be strong too?
I think so, Grace. And we see that every year, really. I would say that, you know, once you get past the top five, the next five, you could, you know, juggle around a bit. Once you get outside the lottery picks, that's when you get a little bit of a discrepancy. But again, when it comes to the depth, you're not going to get a guy in the third round that should have gone in the second round. Let's put it that way. So with that in mind, and we know the Bruins have 5 picks, right? It's hard to say what they should be doing. And I wrote a little bit about this, and you know, Mark is the go-to expert in Providence. He knows Providence like the back of his hand, right? So you've got 2 guys in Trevor Kuntar and Mason Laurie that have already turned pro. You have Brett Harrison. You have Frederick Brunet and Ryan Mass possibly turning pro come September. They're eligible for the American Hockey League. Already you've eliminated 5 players from the Bruins reserve list. And in the next 2 years, you've got 8 more coming that you have to give contracts to retain their rights. So their reserve list is going to be really depleted. So what do? Do you draft a CHL player that you have to sign within 2 years? Or do you go to the college or the European or Canadian Junior A route where you can maintain those rights for 4 to 5 years? So I'm not sure where the Bruins' philosophy is in this. I will say this. I think they're going after size. I think that's the key that you know, later we might talk about a couple of camp invites for development camp. It's all about the size with the Boston Bruins right now.
Why don't you mention those two right now, Dom, since we're on the topic?
There's Ryan Kerwin, who goes to Pennsylvania State University. He can play center. He can play left wing. That's confirmed that he'll be going. He spent two seasons in the United States Hockey League. He had a great rookie season. His production kind of dropped in his second season, but I wasn't too worried about that. You know, he will be a sophomore at Penn State. He had a good freshman season. You know, again, he's that size that I'm talking about. He's 6'2", 205 pounds, plays multiple positions, which the Bruins are, as you know, very interested in. So the other fella is Aaron Parker, who goes to Bowling Green State University. Interesting tidbit about him is he played with 2019 third-round pick Quinn Olson with the Oilers in the AJHL. He's a 6'2", 185-pound right-shot defenseman. So he's got some filling out to do. I'm sure he'll get there. He's an offensive defenseman, put up some great numbers in the A for 2 years. As a freshman with Bowling Green last year, he had, I think it was 13 points in 36 games. Not bad for a first-year defenseman, right? This past season, injuries cut his season short. You know, he only played in 8 games, but still managed to put up 4 points in those 8 games. So he's an offensive defenseman, but with size, he can skate, he can move. But don't count on his defensive game. This guy is a shot-blocking machine. I'm really interested in getting reports from you, Mark, from development camp on what these guys look like. Unfortunately, I can't be there, so I look forward to your reports. But those two guys are two very interesting additions to development camp.
Yeah, and I will be at development camp. I'm working on getting the whole week off and attending every day. I will be on top of getting as much info as you need, Dom, and my other followers out there. And speaking of followers on Twitter, please follow Dom Tiano at Dominic Tiano. That's DominicTiano. He's a fantastic follow, diehard Boston Bruins fan, and more importantly, just a source for us folks out there in the world just to gather information from the next ones, because it's valued information and I love it. And we have Dom on now to talk about his 2023 NHL draft preview that he wrote at dom.hockey on his website. Another fantastic follow. Go over there and subscribe. We wanted to talk about some of the like a couple of players in each one of your rankings as the Boston Bruins pick. And you were talking a little earlier about the difference in leagues and so on and how these things are all ranked. And the first one, and the Bruins are looking for size, too. So immediately I go right to number 92, and I look at Noel Nord from Brynäs in the Junior 20 National League in Sweden. 6'2", 196 pounds. He shoots right. I want to hear about your thoughts about him being a possible target, at that position. But also, what really intrigued me about this was, you said, I can honestly say, having watched a lot of the J20 National League last couple of seasons, you're not impressed. I'm curious about that.
Well, you know, he's ranked fairly highly by Central Scouting. I think he's ranked 20th among European skaters. Bob McKenzie, in his final list, which is probably the go-to source when it comes to rankings, because he's surveying actual NHL scouts and what they think, had him at 77. I have him. I honestly have him in that 92 range myself. And as you know, with Don Lachmalis playing in the J20 National and Oscar Jelbik before him, I've watched a lot of J20 over the past couple of seasons. He's got some good assets. He's got the size, like you mentioned. He can skate. He's a force in front of the net. He's got a good shot, but I would say most of his goals come from the dirty area in front of the net. What I don't like, guys, is that he's a straight north-south player. There's no east-west to his game, and I think in today's game, particularly the way Jim Montgomery wants the Bruins to play, there has to be some east-west, a little bit of east-west in your game. So, you know, is it an IQ thing? I think it might be. And that's, I know people are going to look at the rankings and say, well, you know, they should take this guy if he's there. I'm just giving you my honest feedback. I think, you know, there's other guys I'd rather have in that spot if he's on the board.
Grace, anybody from the 92 pick that you might be interested in?
The 92 pick, honestly, I wanted to sort of talk a little bit more about, I know that you were talking about the importance of that, you know, east-west hockey IQ potentially. The one that I'm most familiar with in the 92nd pick that you have listed is Gavin McCarthy, only because I've watched a couple times that he's played. I one time was at one of his games, and I just think that, I don't know, do you see him? I guess I don't really think of him as being a particularly east-west player. Do you see that more so than the other?
Yeah, I do, Grace, and I think his hockey IQ is higher than Nord's. So if I had to tell you who I would want, there's three players in the list I've given that I would really want. One is Zach Nearing out of Shattuck St. Mary's. Okay. Absolutely love him. Number two is Gavin McCarthy. And number three is Matthew Mania from the Sudbury Wolves of the OHL. Two of them are defensemen, McCarthy and Mania. But I think the Bruins really need to look up front. And that's why I lean to Nearing. You know, incredible high level IQ. He's in a good program with Shattuck St. Mary's. You know, he plays in every situation. He's a very good skater. He's got quick first steps. You know, he's headed to Western Michigan he's headed to. So there's going to be some development or continued development with him there. He would be my top choice. And given the fact that he's 6'3", and just 185 pounds, so he's got some filling out to do. I think that fits everything that the Bruins are looking for, should be looking for. Now, I've seen him ranked anywhere as a very late second to a very early fourth rounder. So he could be on the board where the Bruins pick. Looking up here, Bob McKenzie has him ranked 94th. That would be my number one target.
Moving on to the I'm sorry, I did want to like touch on the Nearing thing. I was totally on board with you with that one. The size is a center and a right shot center, by the way. Mm-hmm. You know, and to get him into the develop, any idea where he's committed to Michigan, correct?
Yes.
Okay.
Go Blue.
All right. No. That's Western Michigan. Is that home of the Brandon Bussey?
No, he's committed to Western Michigan.
Western. Okay. There you go. No, that I like the size of that player. And yeah, what a great program Shattuck is. I mean, so many great players have come out of there. So yeah, he's in good hands when it comes to development, and it'll be interesting to see if a player is picked, like you said, like, you know, at 92, how increased that development could be. Obviously, you know, staying in college as much as possible or leave early, much like Mykulov did. Well, Mykulov wasn't a drafted player, though. He was a free agent signing, correct?
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So, all right. Moving on to this, the second pick with the Bruins have at 124. There's one interesting one that I'm very intrigued about. I actually wrote about this player in a recent article that I had at blackandgoldhockey.com. And one of my choices was Cole Knubel. And it's just for the many people get on me. It's like, oh, you're a nostalgia and you're thinking about his father, Mike, and his history with the team. And yeah, of course, I mentioned that in the article and so on. But I had the option, I was fortunate enough to watch him play with Mason Langenbrunner and Andre Gasau of the Fargo Force when they were both in the USHL. Before, obviously, they went to their college routes with BC with Gasau and Langenbrunner with Harvard. But you got to see other players, while you're watching. And I thought Knubel, even though he was at 5'11", 184, still played an impactful game. And I think that the narrative nowadays of you're not going to make an NHL, you're not going to make it in the NHL if you're a smaller player. I think those days are over because of the creativity that kids have and their everything that's handed to them is pretty much gifted, because if you want to make the best players, you have to provide them with the best resources. And a player like, I think, Knubel is creative in that sense. And I think that he'd be a decent project for the Bruins to pick if he was available at 124.
Well, he's on my list. I'll tell you the questions I do have, guys, is this. First of all, if you're expecting to get Mike Knubel out of Cole Knubel, stop. Both face, because they're not the same players. Cole is smart. He can put up points. We've seen that. He was absolutely fantastic for Canada at the Junior A Challenge. Fantastic. No knocks. The only thing that could prevent him from having a successful NHL career right now is skating. And I think it all comes down to his technique, his mechanics. You can work on him getting a more powerful stride out of him, a longer stride. I think he has to widen his stance a bit to help him become a better skater. He's going to be that much more successful at the NHL level. You're right, Mark, that you don't have to have all that speed as a smaller player in the NHL to be successful these days. But you do have to be able to challenge defenders one-on-one, take them to the outside, take the puck to the net. And if you're lacking that speed, the lack of ability to do that hampers you a little bit. But I do like him in that spot, because I think once you get to professional coaching as opposed to junior coaching or coaching at the college level, it's a world of difference. You know, we used to brag about the work Kim Bramble used to do with the Bruins a couple of years ago with the skaters, right? So I'm not saying that it's holding him back, but that's the one thing that he definitely needs to work on.
Great.
What about, I was just going to say, I'm interested to hear about, I know we were talking a lot about size earlier. The one person who stands out to me, and maybe that's just because I follow Big Ten hockey a lot, is Brady Cleveland, who I know is going to Wisconsin next year.
Yeah.
And he's huge. He's a huge kid. He doesn't really he's kind of, he's not lanky, I don't want to say, but he's a skinnier-ish kid, but he's gigantic. So I don't know. He's the one that I really like in that spot, but I'd love to hear what you think about him.
Yeah, I like him there too. 6'5", 205, 210 pounds, somewhere around there. So he's got some filling out to do. Like you said, Grace, he's not lanky, but he looks lanky. If you really want to call a guy who's 210 pounds lanky. He's a guy, it depends on where you're looking, because some have him ranked as a very early third. you know, FC Hockey has him outside the draft, you know, at 257. So there's one thing we know, you can't teach size, okay? We know the Bruins have tried the likes of J.D. Greenway and Nick Wolf, and they haven't worked out for him. But Cleveland is different. He has the mindset. He's a big hitter. He moves well for his size. He keeps the opponents close. His gaps are tight. We know he's got a long reach. He knows how to use it. He can break up plays just like that. The thing about him that I like, there's a little bit of offense to his game, but he's that tough son of a bitch they need to keep the front of their own net clear.
So like, he's like a prototypical Kevin Miller.
I would say even a tougher SOB, Mark. I would.
And Millsy was pretty freaking tough. Yeah,
But Cleveland has the size and the strength and the IQ and the ability to bring it to another level. So, you know, Grace, he's a perfect example of a guy you really should have some serious talk amongst your scouting staff in that spot. But like I say, he's all over the map in the rankings out there. So it's hard to say. Bob McKenzie has him ranked 90th. So do you take him with the third round pick, or do you hope he falls to that 124 spot?
It's a valid question. It's going to be interesting in these later rounds. And, you know, the Bruins are going to be challenged no matter what, because they don't have the first, second this year. They don't have the first, second, third next year.
No.
You know, if you can't make trades to get that draft capital back, your scouting staff is going to have to be on par, you know, to find these gems late in these next couple of years, NHL entry drafts, to kind of facilitate that, or continue to try to hit home runs on signing NCAA free agents, just to try to close that gap of getting back into, you know, the opening rounds of these drafts. And trust me, I get the whole narrative out there, but you do have to give to get. And Don Sweeney and Evan Gold did what they had to do to put together what was hopeful Stanley Cup champion run this year. They did it before the trade deadline. They freaking hit a home run. They can't be blamed for anything like that. It was just that the product on the ice just didn't deliver when in the most important time, and that was obviously in the first round. So
yeah. Now, if I can bring up a guy in that area, it doesn't fit the size narrative we brought up at the beginning, but would be an immediate, like, I mean, immediate fan favorite in Boston is Angus McDonnell from the Hamilton Bulldogs of the Ontario Hockey League. He's only 5'10", 180 pounds, but he plays like he's 6'5", 210 pounds. It's like, I mean, this kid's motor is nonstop. He goes 110 miles an hour in a 50 zone from the beginning of the shift to the end of the shift. You know, he's an accomplished defensive player. He can play in any situation. He's got an excellent shot that can beat goaltenders from the dots. He's got good speed, gets in there on the forecheck and disrupts plays, and he wins more battles than he loses, and he's only 5'10". You know, he has the potential to be a third liner, but he would be a very good fourth liner at the next level.
And with a name like Angus, come on,
yeah,
that's just a recipe for I'm gonna kick your freaking ass.
Yeah. Now, another guy that's out of your neck of the woods in the USHL is Eric Polkamp, who is re-entering the draft. I had a good first season in the first draft year, but this year just, man, to another level offensively. He, again, only 5'10", but he's at 201 pounds. So he's built kind of like a fire hydrant, won the USHL Defenseman of the Year award. That's, you know, has really taken his game to another level. And he's a right shot, which is what the Bruins need. So he's got some things to work on. You know, I think he needs to better understand zone coverage as opposed to man-on-man coverage. But again, that's a coaching thing. I'm not worried so much about things that coaches can fix. It's whether the raw tools are there. And I think he's got the raw tools.
Moving on to the pick at 188, potentially the Boston Bruins could select. There's an interesting name. It stands right out to me just because of Casey Mittelstadt with the Buffalo Sabres. But obviously it's his brother, Luke, playing for Minnesota in the Big Ten. I know Grace isn't happy to hear this. But anyway, what are your thoughts on him? I'm just going by the name. I really don't know much about him, but 5'11", 165, left shot. I know you're talking about we need increased right shot defensemen, but if he was available, what are the pros and cons, Dom?
You know, again, a smaller guy, 5'11". I can't recall what he weighs in at. You know, good skater. He's got good lateral movement, good four-way mobility, which allows him at the offensive blue line to, you know, create space, open up lanes for himself, for his teammates, can make a good pass, can make good plays once he does that. Where is he? University of Minnesota, right?
Yeah.
He earned a spot with Team USA at the World Junior Championships, correct? I think the best way to describe him is he's a jack of all trades. He doesn't excel in any one area, but he's good enough in all areas that he could earn himself a decent NHL career.
Would you consider him like a Jack Eichel kind of player potential, or even more upside?
I would say on par with Jack Eichel.
Okay.
On par. I wouldn't say that he has. I think Jack may have had more offensive upside.
Grace, your thoughts on a pick at 188?
Yeah, obviously, you know, Minnesota guy. I have a lot of love for the other Big Ten teams, as long as it's not Ohio State. So he definitely is exciting.
Oh, that's good
to
know. I remember that.
Well, I mean, and then we have Mason Little Rice. So it was tough for me to sit with that one. But yeah, no, I think that obviously, like we said, as we get further down in the draft, you sort of start to see this uncertainty that doesn't exist elsewhere in the draft. But the one I'm interested in, and I had never heard of this guy until I read about him in your article, was this wisdom guy from the Rough Riders.
Zachariah.
First of all, great name. But second of all, I mean, he's sort of on the bigger side, I would say. What do you think? How do you think he addresses the needs that we have? And we have a lot of needs.
Well, you know what? 2 years ago, his brother, Zaid Wisdom, was playing in the Ontario Hockey League, and I hoped to hell that the Bruins would have drafted him. They never did. I think he was gone before the Bruins picked. I called Meg Donnell, the guy that would become an instant fan favorite in Boston. Wisdom is right behind him. I think he plays that game with the motor that never quits. High energy, you know, isn't the greatest skater, but he's got some speed and he's got some mobility. He's not afraid to get dirty. What's he listed at? 6'1", 172. So he's got a little bit more size than Mac Donnell does. I think in my list, I probably have him higher than I should. But I think if he follows the progression his brother did at this level, then you know, I'd be happy with him. I think his brother ended up being a third round pick, if I recall correctly. But yeah, I love him. I love the way he plays the game. That doesn't necessarily mean it's going to translate. He's got a great shot. His IQ is well above average. His skills, I would say slightly above average, but his physicality. And you know, that's what Bruins fans want. This is what you're going to get from him.
Dom, I'm curious, and I'm not profiling any players at all, but when you said his name and his brother's name, are those First Nation players?
No. They're I forget where they're from.
Okay.
But they're African American, African Canadian, so.
Okay. All right. Very cool. You know, yeah. I mean, we're very diverse, you know, community here, so we respect all of it. But I was just curious because in my opinion, I've seen that name before, Zachariah, on several First Nation names.
And he's got the best hair.
Ah, nice. He's got the flow. I love it. Yeah. I love it already. All right. Moving on to picks 214 and 220. In the potential 2023 NHL draft from Dom Tiano's article. Please go read it and follow Dom at Dom Tiano on Twitter. Read his stuff at dom.hockey. One that really stands out to me is your first one at 6'4", 200 pounds, left shooting center. And he's playing in the Slovak 2 League. And that is a Franciszek, is it Day?
Yes, you got it, Mark. You've been practicing your...
That's the first time I've ever said that, to be honest with you.
Yeah, so...
I nailed. So proud of myself. Thank you.
Honestly, you know, I threw him in there. I threw Matvey Maximov out of the MHL in Russia on the list just to get some names there. If I'm the Bruins, I am looking at potential over anything else. This is where I want to take a long shot. Okay. And the Bruins are lucky because they also have the Los Angeles Kings pick in the seventh round. So there's two names I'm going to throw at you. Is Owen Bechner, played with the Salmon Arm Silverbacks out of the BCHL, and is going to, hold on, I'll tell you what school is he committed to. I don't have it in front of me, but he's going to, Colorado College. He's committed to Colorado College, not for next season, the season after. So this is one of those players that they would hold the rights to for 5 years because he's got to go back to the BCHL for one more season, or he could play in the USHL next season. He was actually drafted in the third round by Tri-City in their draft this year. So he's got one more season of junior eligibility. Then he goes to Colorado College for potentially 4 more years. Now, this guy is pure offense. Pure offense. He lit up the BCHL. He's a great skater. He's a playmaker. He's a shooter. His defensive game is well established for a player at this level already. And if you look at the rankings, he's all over the map. Some have him in the top 200. Others don't rank him at all.
Yeah, and Elite Prospects doesn't rank him.
Well, if you look at Elite Prospects in my list, they haven't ranked, I think I got 25 names on there. They haven't ranked like 12 of them. So it says a lot for Elite Prospects. So he's all over the map when it comes to ranking. And the reason why is, when do you take a chance on a player like that? Like, most teams are not willing to wait 5 years. With the Bruins, we know they are. They did it with the kid they drafted out of the OHL. I really liked that they grabbed the defenseman, Mark.
I'm in. It wasn't Mast.
No. It'll come to me. Quinn Olson, 5 years. Quinn Olson's going on 6 years. So the Bruins are willing to invest the time. So where other teams maybe not so much. So is this where you take the gamble and the risk? Because this has a potential for high reward with very minimal risk involved here. The other guy is, I don't know how much, Grace, you follow high school hockey. Do you at all?
A little bit, maybe not a ton. Okay. Why? Who are you?
Teddy Townsend out of Minnesota.
Yep.
Okay. Here's another guy. So he played with Eden Prairie. He led the team in scoring, by a wide margin. He made everybody around him better. But where did that stand in the whole state of Minnesota? He was, I don't know, something like in the 50s or 60s in scoring. But we're talking out of 3,100 high school players in the state of Minnesota. Okay. Yeah. So a lot of the publications actually like him and would take him higher than where I would. I know McKee's has him in their top 200. FC Hockey has him at 188. So, but then you get some of the others that don't rank him at all. This is a guy that you're going to end up taking that risk on, but has the potential for high reward. Is he going to be a number one center? No. Same with Beckner. He's not going to be a top liner. Excuse me. But they could fit into your middle six down the road. And I think with these two picks that they have in the seventh round, that's the route they should go, is take that risk and go for that high reward type player.
And the one that really stands out to me is Pionk, because obviously I think you just look to his older brother, Neil Pionk, who ended up being a very good player and was also undrafted, now playing for the Jets. So you sort of saw how he sort of developed into this really great player. Do you see anything in Aaron Pionk, who potentially would go late and could fall to where the Bruins are? Do you see him potentially sort of having that development that I think Neil Pionk had once he got to the league eventually?
Yeah, I don't think he would be to his brother's level, Grace, but I think he could form himself a pretty good and somewhat lengthy NHL career. But he's there. I put him there to give fans an idea of who could be there. But if I'm using my thought process, I'm looking at those low risk guys, or maybe I shouldn't call them low risk. I'm looking at those late round guys that, let's put it this way. If Townsend and Beckner aren't drafted this year, they will most certainly be drafted next year. Just like some of the guys we talked about earlier that went undrafted, and now you're looking at spending a third or fourth round pick to get him this year. I went through the whole same debate with a few years ago with Sean Durzi out of the OHL. I said, no, I'm spending a seventh round pick on him. I want him this year. Let me use my second round pick next year to pick somebody else. Well, no, nobody drafted him. And what ended up happening is somebody had to spend a second round pick the following year to get him. So I would rather spend my seventh round pick this year to get him than a third round pick next year to get him. And in the Bruins case, we don't have one. So you're going to miss out on the player altogether. Right.
Yeah. Just by going back for another year and having an outstanding year increases your value, your draft value. So you're almost apt to want to take that potential and that risk then and there than have somebody else down the road have what you could have had at that particular moment.
Dustin McFall was a defenseman because
you just great example.
Because, you know, although his offensive game never materialized with Clarkson University, he became a fairly decent shutdown defenseman. So I wanted him badly. I wanted the Bruins to take the risk in the sixth round. They took the risk. It didn't materialize. But if it did, and he went undrafted, somebody would have been paying a much higher pick the following year. And this is where I want to pound the table when it comes to the draft. Is no, if your scouts are doing the job and they believe in the player, take him now. Don't wait for next year when it's going to cost you more to get him. Because chances are the guy you're going to take in the seventh round this year isn't going to be an NHL player. So why wait? Take your gamble.
To wrap up this time that we have with you, Dom, where we truly appreciate it. Again, you're just an amazing, knowledge is enough for me to just, feel comfortable with a lot of these, these opportunities that the Bruins might have to pick. But moving on to just another quick topic. What are your thoughts on some current prospects and maybe their first couple of years in the minor pros with the Boston Bruins organization, like Lysel, Merkulov, and Boosie and Bussy and Beecher? Because those players are starting to really gain some notoriety as, when Bruins fans are thinking of saving money and cap space that we really don't have this year. And their potential additions coming into next season and trying to win a roster spot at a really cheap AAV that allows Evan Gold and Don Sweeney to to put together a competitive and compliant roster next season. So what are your thoughts on the couple of those players that I mentioned in their first couple of years of pro hockey?
Guys, I will tell you, and most fans probably won't want to hear this, but of the four names that you mentioned, Mark, three of them will be given absolutely every chance to make the big squad this year. And Bussy is one of them. The one I'm leaving out is Fabian Lysel. And, people are going to automatically assume I'm calling him a bust. I'm not calling him a bust. He needs work. He needs to bulk up. He needs to get some more work. He needs to learn the 200-foot game. And he needs to put his energy in a 200-foot game, not just while he's on offense. So I don't think he's ready. He might be ready halfway through the season, and they'll give him a look. But as of right now, right this minute, Beecher, Merkulov and Bussy will get the opportunities. Now, obviously, with Bussy, it depends on what happens with Allmark and Swayman. I'm a firm believer that, should I say it on this show? I'm a firm believer Allmark is gone. we'll leave that at that. And I think all three have the capability of making the roster out of training camp. The only thing that would hold Bussy back is whether the Bruins are comfortable going in the season with an NHL unproven goaltender as their backup. That might be where they go out and spend $1 million on a veteran backup, put Bussy in the AHL to start and bring him up and give him a few opportunities to see how he does. And then similar with what they did with Kincaid last year is whoever they sign, they can send him down to Providence and keep Bussy up at the NHL level.
Yep.
My sleeper, Mark, is Matthew Patra.
Oh.
Because he's my sleeper. I know he's put in the work We've had him on a podcast here, so I know he's put in the work to bulk up, get stronger, and everything. We already know he's a capable hockey player, and I think if the Bruins go into the season and Patrice Bergeron is not back, David Krejci is not back, and they were unable to get a quote-unquote number one center someplace else, Matthew Pastrnak could steal that show out of camp.
Ooh, I love it. Love the spicy hotness right there. I absolutely love it coming from one of my best friends. Just before we do wrap this up, how come you didn't select any goaltenders? What's up with you and your bias against the crease?
I don't have a bias against goaltenders, Mark. I think, and here's why I didn't. A lot depends on what happens at the NHL level with Allmark and Swayman. So if one of them's gone, like we all think will be, and it's most likely Allmark, Bussy moves up, right? Now you've got Kaiser and you've got DiPietro you could put in the AHL. Who, by the way, both are younger than Brandon Bussy. So I know there are people out there that call them a bust, but, you know, they're still younger than Bussy is. Then you've got Reed Dick that needs to turn pro next year. Bruins have to sign him to a contract by June 1st, 2024. Spedeback will be coming out of his third season in the NCAA and will most likely want to turn pro. If I'm looking for a goaltender, I'm looking for a goaltender next year, not this year, because you've already got 2, 4, 6 that are going to be under contract within a year.
Right. And you want to stay under that 50-man, the contract limit, yeah, and so on. I know that gets really tight and so on. But, you know, I'm always that guy that I'm a goalie, former goalie and so on, so I'm the guru of the show here, but... I was, you know, doing my due diligence with the upcoming draft, and I saw two players that I was really impressed with. Obviously, size is a huge thing, and I think that Bob Asenza and Mike Dunham have done really, really good with the developing core that they've been given. But it does trend on the higher echelon of, you know, bigger netminders and making minimal movements these days. And I really liked what I saw in my video sessions with Damian Kolára from Fagerstad, the J20. Mm-hmm. I thought he's got, and he's Italian, you know, yeah. and he went over to a European league and so on, played for his national program and so on. Mm-hmm. And I thought he's got some pretty decent numbers and a lot of upside that the Boston Bruins coaching staff saw in, like, Reed Dick and his upside. Don't go to elite prospects and look at Reed Dick's freaking stats and so on. They're not going to jump out. It's what he can do and the upside that he has that was so attractive to the Boston Bruins organization. And also Thomas Milich out of the WHL Seattle Thunderbirds. Mm-hmm. I mean, his accolades and his winning pedigree in the past year or two really stood out to me in my video sessions, and I think those two could possibly be late round additions if they were looking goalie. I'm not sure if that's going to happen, but
I don't think they should this year, Mark. Right, based on all the needs that the team has and the depth that they have at goaltending, you know, I'd be looking to next year. It really isn't a great goaltending class. Top to bottom. I mean, you know, there's a couple of guys in the OHL that if they were drafted, I'd say, okay, fine, they got drafted. But there isn't one that I would say this is the guy you absolutely must have out of the OHL. It's just, you know, yeah. I ranked, I think, 9 goalies in my OHL rankings only because I had to put goaltenders on there. Yeah. I mean, if you don't, everybody's going to go like, you know, where are the goalies? But honestly, you know, it's been a down year for me covering the OHL because I don't expect more than 30, maybe 32 players. That's if a goaltender gets picked, drafted out of the OHL this year. And that'll be the second worst year in their history.
Wow. Wow. That's some amazing numbers. I also had one defenseman that I was really intrigued by that I was surprised that I was surprised he was ranked, but was that Rodwin Dionisio? I think that's his name. He's from the Windsor Spitfires.
Dionisio,
I liked his game when I was watching Brett Harrison and so on, when he was being coached by Mark Savard and so on. So,
okay, so let me tell you a little bit, Mark. he had 7 points with Niagara in 20-some-odd games and then got traded to Windsor and literally blew up offensively. And somebody asked me about him today. He says, Dom, he's not on your list. I go, well, no, because I have him ranked 37th in the OHL, which means he's not getting drafted.
Right.
You know, everybody points to his numbers, Mark. I'm not saying you did, but cover this for a living, or pointing at his numbers and the great numbers he put up after the trade to Windsor and playing under Mark Savard. But it's okay, but watch the games. Okay, sure he put up points, but do you not know that Savard moved him up to left wing the majority of the time? He played almost the entire playoffs on left wing. He didn't play defense. And even when he was playing defense, he didn't play defense. This is his second year of draft eligibility, and I'd be surprised if he was picked.
Grace, you got anything for Dom to finish up?
No, it's been great being able to talk about. I think people think that because we have so many late picks that there's not as much to talk about or not as much to appreciate about some of these players. So it's good to hear from an expert and to be able to talk about them, because I think a lot of them have, you know, good chances and good futures in the NHL if they're picked by the right team. And so hopefully we get to see that development soon.
Well, Dom, thank you so much for the time, my man. It was an absolute pleasure getting you back on here. And I know we've talked several times in the past that you're off season. You have more time to do more opportunities like this. So you're welcome anytime to come on the program, talk about what we're talking about, and we'd love to have you.
Yeah, it's like I haven't missed a show sometimes, Mark. It may take me 4 days to get to it. As you know, now that hockey season over, I've been on interacting with Chris and Mike on Monday nights on the live stream.
Nice. Oh, yeah, yes.
Know, yeah, you've seen me on there.
Oh, yeah, having fun.
Joking around, having fun. And, you know, now the opportunities and finally getting to meet Grace. Where are you this weekend anyway? Like, usually you're all over the place.
I do go all over the place. Right now I'm in Jacksonville. This is where I will be for the next month or so, and then I'll be back in North Carolina. So
okay. So like, it's, you know, when I tune in and go, okay, where's Grace this week? You look at the background and try
it's a fun little game. Yeah.
One episode, I don't remember where it was. I'm looking at the background, I'm going, that doesn't look familiar. And then she's telling us she's in a hotel room someplace.
Yeah. Got to respect the dedication.
Yeah. Yeah. But I got lots of free time this summer, guys. So anytime, you know, I'm available. You just let me know.
Dom, any parting words for Steve, who's leaving the episode, the program?
Yeah.
This is his last one.
Steve, I just wish I got to spend more time interacting with you, because, you know, like I said, I've watched the episodes. I never missed one, even though it may take me a few days to get to it. But your knowledge and your passion for the Bruins, very, very few have it. And you brought a lot to the show. You're going with Springfield, right?
Yeah.
Doing some work for Springfield. You know, I can't cheer for Springfield, but I will I will cheer for your success in doing the work for them. But unfortunately, it's still Providence all the way for me.
Right. Yeah. His new podcast will be out in the fall, and it's covering the Springfield Thunderbirds, a team that he currently works for. But him and another another colleague over at the AHL club are putting together a program, and you know, gonna miss him, as you know, we talked about earlier in his parting words. But you know, it's good for him. You know, it's just, this is, it's awesome. You know, and we're bringing on Chris Nosek, who's also a knowledgeable person, and you know, and I think he can drive a good agenda and bring up some good discussion points, and you know, fill those shoes nicely. So we're excited to have a nice transition of passionate Bruins fans that are eager to you know, commit to quality content every week. So certainly appreciate it. But Dom, and, I'm gonna,
and let me just say to the people thinking about it, Mark, that you know, they'd like to come on and write something, and you know what, it only takes a little bit of effort, guys. That's how I started 15 years ago. It's just a little Ontario Hockey League blog, you know, that has gained followers over the last 15 years. I, you know, in a couple of the thousands, we'll say. So, you know, it's a great way to put yourself out there. If you have the passion for the Boston Bruins or the Providence Bruins or even the prospects, it's a good place to start with Mark and you know, put your thoughts down into words. Nobody's going to laugh at you. Nobody's going to make fun of you. It's just a way of getting started. And Mark has had some people move on to bigger things come through his network. So even if it's not a field that you're interested in getting into, and it's just a passion for the game, I suggest you give it a try.
Oh, thanks, Dom. I appreciate that plug. And I'm gonna selfishly plug my friend Grace here, because Grace has asked to you know, inquire about writing a little bit herself. So if she's got the time to contribute, we'd certainly bring her on.
Good for you, Grace. Good for you.
you.
All right, guys. Thank you very much, Dom Tiano. It's an absolute pleasure to talk to you again, and we look forward to watching the draft and seeing if any of these people we talked about, you know, get selected by the Boston Bruins when the whole draft starts on Wednesday night. But as it stands right now, without any trades going on and so on, we are looking at a day two festivities only. But from now until then, things can change. The Boston Bruins can make a deal that gets them back into the first or second round, you know, even back into day one. But who knows? But until then, everybody, thank you for listening. Please support Dom and his stuff. We truly appreciate everything that everybody's done. Grace, thank you very much for the Saturday afternoon get-together with Dom. I appreciate your time so much. And next week, we'll have a new host, and that's Chris Nosek. So,
good old Chris.
Said, good old Chris. I'm going to reel him in, Dom, I promise.
Oh,
okay. But anyway, I'm Mike Allred. That's Grace Roberts. That is Dom Tiano. And we are the Black and Gold Hockey Podcast. We will talk to you next week. Peace out. Thanks again for tuning in and supporting this week's episode of the Black and Gold Hockey Podcast. Please give the show a 5-star rating and write a review on listening platforms such as Apple Podcasts and Spotify Podcasts. If you'd like to contact the show for advertising opportunities or to send us a question or topic idea we should be discussing, please send us an email to blackandgoldproductionsllc@gmail.com. Don't forget to share our program on your social media platforms with other hockey fans and follow our Twitter accounts at blackandgoldpod, at bngproductions, at blackandgold277, and at kevin_o'keefe89. Also, please don't forget to check out our official blackandgoldhockey.com website, where we cover the Bruins organization from the NHL level down to the prospects worldwide. Peace out.